This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am going to be into work for a little bit tomorrow, and I could have done this tomorrow, but I'm actually going out to lunch with a buddy tomorrow, and I'm not sure how long that lunch is going to go, and I thought, you know, you might as well go ahead and take care of this today. I gotta tell you, Jesus was good to us today. I've been working on a system that was going to put out responses to contributions, put out receipts to contributions, and take over from the legacy system. And because of that, I've been doing some quality assurance checks. I've actually been doing them for months, and they've all been fine. And we just had a big systems change a couple of weeks ago, and so I was starting to do it up them up more consistently. But I had done that for a couple of two or three weeks now, and three or four weeks now, and everything's been fine. So as I went into work today, I was actually thinking, you know, I mean, it's been going fine. You've got other things you could do. You know, why do that today? Blah, 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 blah. So I get in today, and we had a little hitch in the get along last night. And in fact, some things didn't run. And so we finished them out, got them all run. And this little voice said, you know, you should really probably check. And I said, okay, fine. So I start running the quality assurance check again. And lo and behold, there is a problem. And thankfully, it wasn't on my side. But there was a problem. And there would have been a problem. But I was able to find that, talk to the guys who were on the other side of it, and they chased it down, figured out what the problems were. They got it fixed. I reran my stuff at the end of the day. Everything came back to normal. Normal being that on about this time of the month, I should have about 40 or 50 exceptions that I have to work through. Well, this morning when I ran the report, there was like 330 exceptions. It was like, whoa, wait a minute. But yeah, so because I thought, you know, you should probably do that today, even though it had been fine for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, we're able to find something really important that needed to be found. So Jesus was good to us today. And the thing of it is if I had decided I was too busy today and I would have just checked tomorrow, I probably would not have seen, I might have seen it because it would have shown up on successive days. But it would have meant that a whole stack of receipts would have gone out of the building. They wouldn't have been right, and, you know, then that would have been a mess. So, anyways, and then I would have been kicking myself because I was like, why didn't you run that yesterday? But, you know, thankfully, that didn't happen. Everything's good. Okay. Last week, we talked about homosexuality, and I promised this week that we would talk about homosexual marriage. Now then, it would be better if you actually listened to last week's first so that you understand my perspective when it comes to homosexuality. But, you know, if you haven't listened to last week's first, that's okay. The only thing that you should understand about my perspective on homosexuality is that I believe that as humans, we have the capability to have any sexual orientation that, you know, we decide that we're going to have. I'm a firm believer in free will. I think when God gave us free will, it was an amazing gift, and that free will extends in a lot of different directions. And so we all have the physical capability to be homosexual, heterosexual, bisexual, transsexual, whatever kind of sexual you want. And really, what it comes down to is the decisions that we make. And because it's a decision, it falls in the same camp with all of the other decisions that we make. So I am not one that just because someone makes a decision to live a homosexual lifestyle, that's suddenly unclean and an abomination, and I feel the great need to tell them that, you know. But that's all I'm going to say about that, because I don't want to redo, like, the whole thing we talked about last week. And I just missed my turn. Okay, we'll go this way. There's one street here that if I don't get turned on it, then I have to go through a bunch of construction. So there may be a bunch of thumpy, thumpy, thumpy today, but that's okay. Homosexual marriage. Let's talk about this. Okay, first of all, why do I even want to talk about it? Is it just because I'm trying to jump on the bandwagon and make sure everybody knows my opinion? No, not really. Well, maybe a little bit, but no. Not really, because the whole path and focus of my life is to ferret out those deceptions that the flesh may be playing on me, those tricks that the flesh is trying to play on me to get me to begin to travel down a path that will create an environment of failure for me. And so in any of these issues, when I'm talking about these issues, I'm not talking about them necessarily just so that everybody goes, oh, well, Phil has an opinion on that too. I'm really rehearsing them in my own mind so that I can understand what's really happening in those situations. And when I take a stand on something, I'm taking a stand on it because it is driven by spirit and not by flesh. Because anything that we take a stand on that's being driven even in part by flesh is eventually going to lead to some kind of failure. And that's a really important thing to understand. The flesh can actually lead us down paths that feel very righteous, that we feel like we're absolutely justified in. But when we actually get all the way down the path, we find out that it's not really a place that we want to be. And I fear that in our standard stance on homosexual marriage, we're actually ending up on the wrong side of the argument. And we're ending up being very exclusionary and very emotional. And we're ending up, you know, in a very judgmental place, which to me is always flesh. So, having that as a foundation, then, what approach do we take? My approach is usually the same, and that is, let's get down to the basic core principles, see what those are, and then run them out to their reasonable conclusion. And let's just see if we can do this, just keeping our emotions tamped down and just run out what is reasonable. Okay. So, starting with marriage. If we're going to start with marriage, we need to back up one step, and we really need to start with male and female. I have a chapter in the book, Still Whispers, on this. Why did God make male and female? And then out of that, why did God make marriage? Because he very definitely made marriage. The Bible tells us that. God made male and female. And I'm not going to go into all the text for it and all that kind of stuff. You can read the book. There's a chapter called Male and Female if you're interested. But it is my firm belief that God made male and female so that we could have an example, a daily example, on this earth and in our lives of the relationship that God desires to have with us. That God is the masculine and the human race is actually the feminine. And it's more than just male and female. Specifically is this whole idea of marriage, that God as husband and we as brides. This idea is laced through Scripture, and the big culmination of the idea and the expression idea in my mind comes in Ephesians 5, where Paul is talking about husbands and wives, and he says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. So the picture that Paul paints for us of marriage is that marriage as an institution exists so that husbands in the role of Christ can give themselves sacrificially to their wives to help their wives be everything they can be, and that wives can give of their selves as well to assist their husbands and help their husbands in all of their adventures and epics in life. In other words, it's this intimate partnership where each person is working for the other person's good. It's not some kind of a, I'm the husband and the king and you just do what I tell you to do. I mean, that is not the biblical picture of marriage. And from here on out, when I speak of the biblical picture of marriage, what I'm actually going to use is a different phrase altogether. I'd like to use the phrase covenant relationship. And the reason that I want to use the phrase covenant relationship is because I want to get away from the connotations that the word marriage has, because different people interpret that word different ways. And if we're sitting over on our side and using the word marriage, and people are on the other side and they're using the word marriage, and they're using it two different ways, we are never going to understand each other. So instead of using the word marriage, I will use the phrase covenant relationship. And when I use covenant relationship, I'm not just talking about a man and a woman who have a piece of paper. I'm talking about a man who is fully committed to his wife, who gives of himself sacrificially to cause her to become everything she can be, to cause her to have her epics, to have her quests in life, to be fulfilled as a human being, and a wife who's doing the same thing for her husband. So that's the covenant relationship. And that's what God established. Now, what has happened over time is that extra stuff has been packed into it. You know, we have this extra stuff like, oh, if you're married, you get a break on your taxes. Oh, if you're married, you know, you get a break on your health insurance. Oh, if you're married, you get visitation rights in the hospital. But all that stuff is not a part of the covenant relationship. All that stuff is more about the civil side of marriage, because somewhere along the line, governments and companies and whatever decided that they would do their good part for the world by helping strengthen marriages by giving these types of benefits. But honestly, I really think that that approach has not gotten us what we thought it would get us. Let me give you an example. Let's say for some reason that the United States suddenly decided that we really need more Christians in America. So what we're going to do is we're going to give Christians a tax break. And what you'll need to do is go down to the judge and get a card. And you can take that card to your minister and answer some questions, and the minister will put a checkbox on and say, yes, you're a Christian. And then you can get your tax break. Now, are there any of us who really believe that that would contribute to stronger Christians? Of course not. Because you and I know as well exactly what's going to happen. People are going to go down and get the cards, and they're going to fill them out. They're going to go to their pastor, and their pastor is going to say, do you believe that Jesus Christ is your Savior? And they're going to go, oh, yes. Yes, I really do. You know, or he's going to lead them in the sinner's prayer. He's going to do whatever ritual he's going to do before he'll sign the card and put the checkbox in there. And a lot of that ritual is going to go in one ear and out the other, because the guy is really in it for the tax break. And I fear what has happened in a lot of our heterosexual marriages, quote unquote, is that what we have ended up with is people getting married not because they wish to have a covenant relationship, or maybe because they wish to pay lip service to it, but they don't actually work it out. But instead, they want to get married because young Christians want to have sex, and that's technically the only legal way they can have sex, and so they're going to get married. Or they want to get the tax break, or they want to have better health benefits, or yada, 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 yada. And so we end up with all of these heterosexual marriages where you look at them, and when you lay the standard of a covenant relationship up against those marriages, you go, yeah, that's not really working, is it? Because the standard idea of marriage in America is the man who comes home, flops down on the couch, and starts barking orders to his wife about, get me a beer, woman, where's my dinner, blah, 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 blah. You know, we have men who are disconnected from their families, who they just want to come home and watch TV. The kids don't have any fatherly influence. You know, the wife is supposedly the smart one and level-headed one, and, you know, the husband is the buffoon. Is this not the picture we see over and over again? Well, when you lay the idea of a covenant relationship up against that picture, there's this huge disconnect. And then what we have is we have an entirely different group of people who have made different choices in their life, and they're on the outside of it. And when they look in, they don't ascribe to the idea of a covenant relationship at all. They don't think that God made male and female for God to reflect his relationship in the world, and they certainly don't think that the purpose of marriage is for a man who is fully dedicated to his wife, you know, to give of himself to his wife to help her fulfill his edit. None of that's in their mind. All they see is the civil component. And so they look in from the outside, and they see bickering, and they see divorces, and they see, you know, non-profitable relationships. And yet, just because this man and this woman have trotted through this little ceremony that they pretty much promptly forgot everything they vowed to do, now they get tax breaks. You know, They get better health insurance. They get visitation rights. And those people put up their hand and go, excuse me, how come we can't get this? And, you know, I think that's a very valid question. People say, well, you know, we got to protect the sanctity of marriage. We have to, you know, and that's between a man and a woman. And my whole contention, which I made this point at the end of Male and Female, is that, whoa, whoa, time out. The sanctity of marriage is not between a man and a woman. The covenant relationship is a whole different thing. And if you are going to degrade the word marriage into something that's just between a man and a woman, I think what you've done is you've set yourself up for failure. Because you've taken the heart right out of the word. You've taken the real thing right out of the word. Now, honestly, one of the best ideas I've heard, because I've chatted with my friends, you know, for the past 2 weeks over this, and I've gathered a lot of input from them, and it's been a really interesting couple of weeks as we've been talking about all this. One of the best ideas that I heard that came out of this whole thing was that there is one preacher, and I better not say his name because I'm not sure. But he suggested that what should happen is that the United States government should take the civil component of marriage completely away from preachers. And at first when I heard that idea, I went, whoa, what? But then I thought, wait a minute, hold it. That's actually might be a really great idea. In that case, what would happen is you have a couple, they want to get married. Or actually, they want to enter into a covenant relationship. They're serious about this. It's not just that they want to get the civil benefits. They want to enter into a covenant relationship. And so what they do is they go down to the courthouse, just like they do now. They get themselves their marriage certificate. But instead of taking it back to the preacher, what they do is they go in, they make an appointment, they go before the judge. He does the whole thing, do you, do, I do, I do, I do, I do. Great, sign here, bing, 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 bing. Ta-da, now you have all the civil benefits. Done. You have joined yourself together and you get the civil benefits. You've signed the forms. In that case then, you know, you got your tax breaks, all that kind of stuff. Then, for those who actually want a covenant relationship, they go back to the preacher with that piece of paper and they say, here it is. We've done that step. Now what we want is we want before a congregation of God, of our friends and before God, to say that we recognize that there is an additional component to this. There is a covenant relationship that we can enter into whereby we agree that we are going to give of our lives sacrificially to each other to help each other be all that we can be. And you know, I think one of the things that would happen if we did that, and if we were serious about this, is that the divorce rate would still be up around 50% for those people who just went through the civil ceremonies because they're human beings and they have flesh. And if they don't know how to contend with that flesh, you can bet that flesh is going to wreak as much destruction as it can wreak. And sooner or later, there's going to be a divorce, or somebody's going to kill somebody. I mean, that's what, unfortunately, that's what it's going to come down to. But then we could also, as the church, point to and say, these are our covenant relationships. And what should happen is our divorce rate is much, much lower here. Because this is not something that people are doing just for the benefit of doing it. This is something that people are doing because they see what God has put forth as an example, and they agree that they want to live by that example. Now, what's interesting is when I go through this with all of my friends, I pretty much get the same response. I'm getting my mail and checking for wasps, because just a few days ago, I picked up my mail, took it into the garage, and a wasp stung me. I had a little moment there, which we'll probably talk about in later podcasts. Anyways, you know, the reaction that I have gotten from my friends as I've talked to them about this, and then I pause and I look at them and say, okay, does that make sense? And all of them get this kind of pained expression on their face, and they go, yeah, it makes sense. One of my friends, when I kept looking at him, and he kind of looked at me and just went, processing? And so, you know, they're just uncomfortable with it. Some try to come up with some sort of exception for it. Like, I had one friend that I was talking to, and he said, yeah, he said, but, you know, even, I'm backing into my garage. He said, that's true, but even in, you know, committed relationships in the homosexual community, it's not unusual for them to have multiple partners. And I grinned at him, and I said, yes, and the same thing could be said for the heterosexual community. And he bust out laughing, and he said, oh, he said something like, oh, baby. He said, because he knew what he had just done. You know, he had come up with an objection where he could characterize the homosexual community in one way when, in fact, the heterosexual community had exactly the same problem. And honestly, you know, one of the things that I think people are concerned about is, well, what will this do to our society? You know, what will happen when we have all these committed homosexual marriages? Will that mean that then people will just, more people will flock to homosexuality? And my response is, you've got to understand something. What you need to understand here is that 3 or 4 years after we have homosexual marriages, their divorce rates are going to be exactly the same rate as heterosexual marriages. And the reason that they're going to be exactly the same rate is because we're all humans and we all have flesh. And those children that are raised in heterosexual versus homosexual marriages, they're not going to have a bigger inclination towards homosexuality because they're going to see that their parents fight just like everybody else fights. And so, you know, they're not necessarily going to go into life thinking, well, that's really what I want to be. I want to be a homosexual. I mean, because all the mystery and the mystique of it, you know, once homosexual marriage is actually allowed, and really in my terminology, once homosexual civil unions are actually allowed, just like we have heterosexual civil unions, as opposed to those who want to go on and have a covenant relationship. Once those things are allowed, we're going to see that there's problems on both sides of the fence because ultimately we're all humans and we fight the same thing. Now, I said all that and I'll close with this. I'm not trying to tell anybody how they're supposed to vote, if it even comes up for a vote. And frankly, if it comes up for a vote, I don't know how I would vote. But as I look across all of these things, this is what I see. I see a Christian community that is embattled, that has drawn lines of separation, that is hostile, that is emotional, that is, you know, trying to make a stand on marriage should be between a man and a woman, when I think that already has degraded the definition of marriage, if that's all it's going to be between a man and a woman. And I don't see that we're at a place where we're creating an environment of success for us around this issue. And that's my concerns. My concern is that a lot of this emotion and a lot of this hostility is being driven by the flesh, and it will lead to failure. There was one final thing that I told my buddies as we were talking about it this week. I said, you know, there is one element that may sway me if it ever comes to a vote and I have to vote. There is one element that may sway me towards actually voting for homosexual, quote-unquote, marriage. In my terminology, homosexual civil unions. And I said, that's this. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, look, if you've got someone who is compelling you to do something, who is saying, you have to do this, you have to walk with me a mile, Jesus' response to him was, fine, I'll go 2 miles with you. If you have someone who says, I want to take this from you, I'm going to take your coat, he says, fine, give him your cloak too. Because that's not really what the essence of life is all about. And I think when we understand that when we say marriage, that it's a covenant relationship that we're really talking about. We're not talking about the civil union sides. If we have someone coming to us and what they're really asking for is the civil union sides, you know, why in the world, how does it help me to keep someone from getting a tax break? How does it help me to deny someone the ability to visit a loved one in the hospital? How does it help me to say, no, you can't have those medical benefits as well? Isn't it better to be giving and kind and gracious? And if, as Jesus says, someone comes and makes a demand of you, that you say, you know what? There you go. You can have that. Because ultimately, none of that really impacts the true covenant relationship. Once you understand what the true covenant relationship is. And the fact of the matter is that when you understand why God established the covenant relationship, that it has to be between a man and a woman. Because throughout Scripture, God paints himself as masculine and he paints humanity as feminine. And more than that, he paints himself as the husband and he paints us as his bride. And once you understand that that's what God means when he talks about that covenant relationship, if people want to take the word and redefine it down just to the simple civil union stuff, that's fine. We know the truth. And we can rest in that truth and not feel like we have to go around and beat a drum and act like we're trying to keep things from people that, as far as I'm concerned, they should have. Why wouldn't we let them visit each other in the hospital? Anyways, so that's the big speech on homosexual marriage. And, you know, we'll get on to other things next week. My name is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Have a great weekend.